Hello everyone and namaskar. So today's podcast is a continuation of the reading of the book titled Anandamurti, the Jamalpur Years. And this is a reading of the 25th chapter titled Personal Contact. The secrets of Brahma, his micropsychic and cognitive secrets, are known only to him. And unless and until he expresses himself through some physical form, how can his secrets be known to others? And that is why it is said, Brahma eva guru reka na para. That is, Brahma himself is the guru. There cannot be any second guru. His secret is known to him only. And he expresses himself through a framework, a form. Now, generally people say that the form is the guru, but the form is not the guru. Guru is expressing himself through that form. When Baba announced late in 1958 that each disciple would have the right to one personal contact, it seemed little more than a chance for the new initiates to be alone with Baba. A privilege the senior disciples had often enjoyed during the early days of Anandamarga. But as the line started forming during DMC, it gradually became clear that PC was not simply a chance for the new disciples to be alone in the room with the master and chat. The formality that began to accompany Baba's PC sessions was indicative of a deeper import, the landmark nature of this private contact between master and disciple. A few years later, Chitij accompanied Baba to Delhi for DMC as his attending secretary. One of his duties was managing Baba's PC schedule. The first session was fixed for after Baba's return from morning walk. However, it started late because the walk had been delayed by the passage of a long freight train at a crossing. When Chitij stopped the PC at 1:30, the time fixed for Baba's midday bath and lunch, there were still 4 or 5 disciples in line. Chitij informed Baba that it was time for his bath, but Baba told him to send the next person in. "Okay, Baba," Chitij said, "but please finish the PC in 2 minutes. Otherwise, you'll be late for your lunch." Baba didn't reply, but the disciple didn't leave his room for half an hour. When he finally came out, Chitij stopped the PC again and told the women in the kitchen to get Baba's lunch ready. Then he went in to inform Baba that PC was over. "You know, Chitij, there is a boy sitting outside, and he is praying to me to please give him PC. He has been waiting a long time. So kindly allow me to do one more, only one." "Okay, Baba, but please finish in 2 minutes. It's getting late." Baba told Chitij to close the door and asked him to sit next to him on his cot. "You see, Chitij, when a person comes to me for PC, I first have to clean his mental plate. In order to do that, I have to make him realize his mistakes. He may weep, he may resist, but one way or another, I have to get him to repent for his misdeeds. After that, I have to infuse more life into his Ishta Mantra. Once I do this, the person develops a great interest in sadhana. So I have to take an oath to look into all his activities for the next 6 months. This is a technical process. Even if I wanted to do it quickly, I could not. It cannot be done in 2 minutes." "Okay, Baba, but please finish as soon as possible. Otherwise, you will have to take your lunch very late." Baba took another half hour to complete the PC. When he finally sat down to lunch, it only lasted 2 minutes. A couple of mouthfuls of vegetables and a glass of milk. During Baba's visit to Gorakhpur in 1960, he stayed in the house of Acharya Sachidananda. An indigent law student named Rajendra Pandey got permission for PC and remained in Baba's room for nearly 40 minutes. When he came out of the room, he was crying. He went to the portico of the house and sat by himself, lost in his thoughts, the tears flowing profusely. One of his professors, Acharya Pratapaditya, who was employing him as a tutor for his children in order to help him out, grew concerned. He went and asked him what the matter was. "Acharyaji, please don't ask me anything now," Rajendra replied. "I am not in the state of mind to say anything. I will tell you everything later on. I can only say this much. Baba is not a human being. He is God himself." Rajendra later left without informing anyone. When Pratapaditya learned that he had gone, he became worried that he might have left out of reaction to some punishment Baba had given him. He went to the attending secretary and got permission to enter Baba's room. "Baba, Rajendra was crying a lot after his PC. What was the matter?" "The boy has committed a lot of sins in his life, so I gave him punishment." "But Baba, is there a single human being on this planet that has not committed some sin or another? It is human nature to err." "You are quite correct. It is perfectly natural for a human being to commit sins. But there are different gradations of misdeeds. Have you ever been to a post office?" "Yes, Baba." "Then you might have seen that there is a mail sorter who sorts the letters. He has a number of different bins in front of him, and he drops the concerning letter in the appropriate bin. In the same way, I demarcate human beings into different categories and behave with them accordingly. Those who need to be punished, I punish. Those who don't need any punishment, I don't punish." "But Baba, how could you know that he had committed so many sins?" "Pratapaditya, if you make your conscious mind as subtle as your causal mind, then you can penetrate into the deepest recesses of anyone's psyche and uncover all the experiences undergone by that mind since its origin. Everything is stored in the causal mind. If you make your mind subtle enough, you can know everything." The next day, Rajendra returned to Sachidananda's house to have Baba's darshan. Pratapaditya availed of the first opportunity he got to ask him about his PC. Rajendra narrated for him his experience. "When I went inside the room, I did sastang pranam and then sat in front of Baba. As soon as I sat down, Baba said, 'At such a young age, you have committed so many sins. Why did you do such things? Explain yourself.' I thought this was something sadhus generally tell their disciples. I assumed Baba was doing the same thing, so I denied it. I told him I hadn't committed any sins. He told me to try to remember correctly. Again, I insisted that I had not done anything wrong. Baba became angry. 'You still deny it? Look behind you.' I turned to look, and there on the wall behind me, I saw one of my sinful actions being played out as if it were a movie reel. I turned away out of shame and hung my head. 'Now do you remember?' 'Yes, Baba,' I said. 'I remember.' 'This is not all, my boy,' he said. 'You have committed many sins far more serious than this.' I thought then that Baba might have hypnotized me. So again I denied that I had committed any other sins. Baba commanded me to turn back and look at the wall again. I saw another sinful act for from my life projected on the wall, just like before. Then Baba started to show me one shameful scene after another. They were incidents only I knew about. While I was watching them, Baba remained silent. I knew then that he had miraculous powers. But I thought it must have been because he was a powerful tantric. Baba asked me if I understood. I told him I didn't understand. He asked me to sit in meditation. I meditated for a few minutes, and then I heard him ask me to open my eyes. When I opened them, I could see neither Baba, nor the cot on which he was sitting, nor the walls, nor the room itself. All I could see was overpowering effulgence in all directions. Nothing else was visible. Then I became senseless. When I came to my senses, my head was on Baba's lap, and he was petting me affectionately. He made me promise not to do such mistakes again, to be an ideal person, and do only good work for the society. Then he blessed me and sent me out. There was no punishment or any mention of it. All I could feel as I left the room was a love that I cannot describe, and tremendous bliss from the touch of his hand on my head. I thought that if even the person closest to me, like my parents, came to know about even some of my black past, they would hate me. But Baba, though he knew everything, gave me more love than I have ever experienced in my life. Only a God can love a sinner like me as much as Baba loves me. By the time Baba started giving personal contact, his strictness with his disciples' faults and his readiness to punish them for their misdeeds was a frequent topic of discussion among the Margis, a fact Baba was well aware of. One Sunday morning, Baba was tending the small garden in his Rampur colony quarters, a regular part of his daily routine. Throughout the years he lived in Jamalpur, while he was clearing the soil for some new seedlings, a young man walking along the road stopped and asked him if he knew the way to the Anandamarga ashram. Baba gave him directions and asked him why he wanted to go there. The young man explained that he was going to meet his guru. He politely invited Baba to come as well and take advantage of the opportunity to learn spiritual sadhana. "Oh no," Baba said, "I would be afraid to go there. We've heard stories about Anandamarga and its guru." "What kind of stories?" "We've heard that the guru punishes his disciples. I've heard from the neighbors that he can be very severe with them. I wouldn't have the courage to go in front of him." "I'm sure he only punishes people who deserve it," the young man replied, signs of worry starting to creep into his face. "Maybe. Are you really sure you want to go there? There is still time to turn back." "I'm sure." The young man thanked him for the directions and headed down the route that Baba had pointed out. Later that day, the new initiate, who had yet to see a photo of Baba, in keeping with the rules prevailing at the time, was ushered into Baba's room for PC. He was stunned to see the same person who had given him directions that morning. Baba, on the other hand, was laughing. "You see, you are braver than I am. You came knowing that you might be punished, whereas I might not have come had I been in your shoes." Early in 1961, Shiva Trivedi was accompanying Baba to the office when he noticed some swelling in Baba's hand. When he voiced his concern, Baba explained that he had had to punish a person in PC who had committed a murder. He had no choice but to be very severe with that person. Then Shiva remembered one PC a couple days earlier. Baba had dragged a young man out of the room by his hair and told him in front of the Margis that if he had been a judge, he would have sentenced him to hang. Shiva suggested to Baba that he use a stick for such people in order to save his hands. Baba approved this suggestion, and a small stick was brought for that purpose. From then on, Baba kept the stick under his pillow whenever he gave PC. He would not discontinue using other forms of punishment, but the stick soon became his favorite medium for removing the samskaras of his more wayward disciples. Soon it would become so famous among the Margis that they even gave it a name, Dukkaharan. Even Baba called it by that name on occasion. Sometimes Baba would also bring out the stick during general darshan. One time, a new initiate, a rather fat gentleman from Bagalpur, was in the audience. Baba asked Dasarath to see his mental plate. When Dasarath told Baba that it was blackish in color, Baba said that if he died, he would take the body of a small animal in his next life. The man became frightened and started shouting, "Baba, Baba!" Baba grabbed his ear and gave him several sharp thwacks on the thigh with the stick, which he had kept behind the bolster. Then Baba asked Dasarath to see the color of his mental plate again. This time it was much clearer. Baba scolded him for his mistakes and extracted a promise that he would rectify himself. He told him to forget his past, do his sadhana sincerely, and start a new life from that day forward. In July of that year, a DMC was held in Bethia, during which Baba called attention to the punishments he was giving to some of the disciples in open assembly. Some people commit great crimes, while others only commit small mistakes. As per cosmic law, punishment has to be meted out accordingly. What is your opinion? Should I continue giving punishment as per cosmic law? The hundreds of Margis present all agreed in unison, and the stick became a permanent feature of Baba's rendering of divine justice. Once the stick was securely under Baba's pillow, the particular disciple's samskaras would dictate whether it needed to put in an appearance or not. Ramchandra had a close friend in Sahebganj, Ramlakan, who was a Brahmin and proud of his high caste. Ramchandra tried to convince him to abandon his caste feelings, but he met with little success. He did, however, convince him to take initiation. Soon afterward, Ramlakan told him, "I want to ask your Baba something. If he answers me correctly, then I will follow your Anandamarga." Ramchandra laughed. "My Baba is more beautiful than you can imagine. Come, let us go to Jamalpur. You will get the answers to all your questions without even having to ask." The following Sunday, they and one other friend boarded the early morning train for Jamalpur. As they were approaching Jamalpur Junction, Ramlakan's legs started to grow heavy. By the time they reached the station, he was unable to even get up from his seat. He became frightened. "I don't think I can get off the train," he said. "My legs won't move." Ramchandra grabbed his shoulders and shook him. The strange sensation passed just as suddenly as it had come. When they reached the Jagriti, the three companions were the only candidates for PC. Ramlakan was the first to enter Baba's room. When he got up from Sastang Pranam, Baba asked him his name. "Ah, so you are Ramlakan Mishra," Baba said. "You are not a good man. In fact, you are a great sinner. So you have come to test me. Ask me what you want to ask." Ramlakan was confused. Ramchandra had been with him the whole time. He didn't understand how Baba could have known. "Ask, you sinner. Ask what you came here to ask." Ramlakan remained mute, unable to think properly. Baba pulled out his stick from beneath the pillow and gave him a good thwack on his side. "Look at the back wall," he commanded. Ramlakhan turned and saw scenes of his misdeeds projected on the wall, one by one, while Baba provided the narration. "Alcohol at this place, robbery at that. What do you say now? Tell me. Tell me." Ramlakhan was speechless. The tears started pouring down. Baba's tone softened. "Okay, my boy. You are my son. You are my responsibility now." Baba continued speaking with such compassion that Ramlakhan thought he must be dreaming or else in heaven. Then he lost consciousness and entered into trance. Baba had to call for his attendants to enter the room and carry him out. When Ramchandra saw the attendants carrying his friend out of Baba's room, he became frightened. He was afraid that Baba had hit Ramlakhan so hard that he had killed him. What would he tell his children? When he stammered his concern to Baba's attendants, they smiled and told him not to worry. He was in a state of trance and would soon come back to his normal consciousness. Then his other friend entered Baba's room. He came out soon afterward, red faced and crying. Ramchandra steeled himself, convinced that his position was indeed grave, though he hadn't committed any mistakes that he could remember. He was sure that Baba would not spare him. He went in and did Sastang Pranam. When he got up, Baba was all smiles. "So Ramchandra, you have come. How nice. You have been doing good work, I hope. How is your sadhana going? You have to improve your concentration," and so on. When Ramlakhan came back to normal consciousness, he recounted what had happened in his PC for his two companions. "He really is a god," he told them, when he had finished telling the story. Shortly after that, he left his job in Sahibganj to become a full-time volunteer worker for Ananda Marga. To the marked displeasure of his in-laws, who would continue to hold Ramchandra responsible until Ramlakhan finally returned to Sahibganj, where he became one of the pillars of the local Margi community. Devi Chand was one of the most prominent and productive acharyas in Ananda Marga, a robust, energetic man who, it was sometimes said, could do the work of three acharyas in half the time. He had been a freedom fighter during India's struggle for independence and commanded tremendous respect and reverence among the general public wherever he went. He did, however, have one bad habit. He used to falsify his travel allowance vouchers and pocket the extra money. In those days, this was a common, even expected practice among government employees, and still is. But it was, nevertheless, an embarrassment for the other Margis who worked under him in the Department of Agriculture in Ranchi, especially Kshitij. For Devi Chand was not only his boss, but also his acharya. Some of his co-workers will sometimes taunt him about it. "How can you teach morality when an acharya of Ananda Marga falsifies his TA vouchers?" There was nothing he can say to them. He sometimes prayed to Baba to remove his acharya's bad habit. But neither he nor the other Margis there dared to say anything directly to Devi Chand due to the great respect they felt. During one of Baba's visits to Ranchi, Kshitij served as a local attending secretary. During PC, he sent in a young initiate who worked as a clerk in his office. After a few minutes, he heard Baba calling his name. When he opened the door, he found Baba glaring at the boy. "Kshitij, what kind of a scoundrel have you sent me? Did you know that this boy falsifies his TA vouchers and pockets the money?" Baba turned back to the boy and shouted, "Who is your acharya?" The frightened boy was unable to get the words out. "Kshitij, who is his acharya?" "Baba, his acharya is Devi Chand. Bring him here right now." Kshitij bolted out of the room and returned a minute or two later with Devi Chand. "Devi Chand," Baba said, as the acharya entered the room, "this boy is your initiate. Did you not look into his conduct before you initiated him? Did you know that he has been presenting false TA vouchers and pocketing the money? What punishment should I give him?" Devi Chand kept silent. "Okay then," Baba continued. "I'm going to beat him for his crime unless and until you forgive him." Baba took out his stick and hit the boy on the side of his thigh. "Devi Chand, do you forgive him?" Devi Chand's face became flushed, but he remained silent. Baba nodded and hit the boy a second time. "Devi Chand, do you forgive him now?" Devi Chand's face turned even redder, but he still didn't say anything. Baba continued to beat the boy, who by then was pleading with his acharya to forgive him. Finally, Devi Chand answered Baba in a weak voice, "Baba, I forgive him." Baba smiled and told the boy to beg forgiveness directly from his acharya. The boy touched Devi Chand's feet and asked his pardon. By this time, Devi Chand was visibly shaken. Tears were streaming down his face. He stammered out his forgiveness. Baba consoled the boy and made him promise to become an ideal human being. Once the boy had left the room, Baba turned his gaze on Devi Chand. "Devi Chand, a person has no right to forgive others if he is guilty of the same mistake. Do you understand?" "Yes, Baba." There was no more mention of the TA bills, but Devi Chand never presented another false voucher. Occasionally, the work of cleaning a person's mental plate required extreme measures. One Sunday before General Darshan in Jamalpur, Baba was giving PC to Baleshwar's nephew, an officer in the BMP. After a few minutes, the Margis heard Baba shouting inside the room. This was followed by the sound of him beating the officer with his stick. It was so loud that some of the Margis who were waiting for Baba's darshan flinched when they heard it. After a couple of minutes, Baba called out for another stick. He had broken the first one. Nagendra of Musafapur, who was the attending secretary, cracked open the door and handed Baba another stick. The beating resumed. A few minutes later, the door burst open. The police officer, a burly hulk of a man, came running out with Baba, all 5 feet 3 inches of him, chasing him from behind and scolding him mercilessly. While the officer cowered in one corner of the darshan room, Baba caught him by the ear and shouted, "Should I reveal to the authorities what you have done and have you executed? Better I kill you right here and now." The policeman, weeping loudly, begged Baba for mercy. "Beg pardon from each and every Margi in this room," Baba told him. "If even one Margi does not pardon you, then I will kill you here and now." One by one, he went to each of the Margis present, and finally even to the volunteer who was serving as gatekeeper. No one knew what to think, but everyone pardoned the policeman of his unknown crime. Then Baba softened somewhat and took him back into his room to complete the PC. A few days later, Nagendra had a chance to go on field walk with Baba. When they reached the neem tree, he got an opportunity to talk to Baba privately. He asked him why he had given that officer so much punishment and whether or not all his sins were gone. Baba told him in confidence that he had raped and murdered a young woman, the sister of one Margi, even though she had pleaded for mercy. This is a social crime, Baba told him, and social crimes cannot be pardoned without severe punishment. I could have produced proofs of the crime, but he admitted it and accepted his punishment. 50% of the samskara was removed by the beating, 25% by repentance and asking pardon, and the remaining 25% will be taken care of through sadhana. A year later, Nagendra was again overseeing the personal contacts during one DMC. A lean young man came up to him and requested permission to have PC with Baba. When he asked him who he was, the man replied, "Don't you recognize me? I'm Baleshwar's nephew. I begged you for pardon that day when I had PC with Baba." Nagendra was shocked to see how much he had changed. "I have suffered a lot since we last met," the young man said. "I lost my job, then I fell ill for a long time and lost a lot of weight. Now I'm working as a clerk, but no matter what happens, I will never leave my sadhana." One day, Baba was giving PC in the Jamalpur Jagrati to the last person on the list, Shiva Narayan. After half an hour, Baba opened the door and called Chandradeva, Dasarath, and another couple of Margis inside. They found Shiva Narayan sitting in lotus posture in front of Baba's cot, absorbed in samadhi. Baba sat back down and asked him to sit as well. "Dasarath," he said, "see this boy's previous life." "Baba, that is not possible without your grace." Baba leaned forward and touched Dasarath at the back of his head. He repeated his request. Dasarath described the person walking in a village. "What is the name of the village?" Baba asked. "Baba, I am going all over the village, but I don't see any signboard." "Then come back to the present. Go to the nearest railway station and read the sign there." After Dasarath read out the name, Baba said, "The village you saw is 4 miles from the railway station. The boy's name in that life was Devanath Banerjee. He was born 400 years ago in that village. Now look again into his past life and see what he is doing. Baba, he is angling for fish in a nearby river." "Yes, this was his main work. He was a fisherman." When the demonstration was over, Chandradeva asked Baba a question. "Baba, you always show us everyone else's past lives, but you never tell us about yours." Suddenly everyone became tense, except for Shiva Narayan, who was still in trance. They were afraid of how Baba might react to what was assuredly an inappropriate question. Chandradeva, who had realized his indiscretion the minute it came out of his mouth, felt a sinking feeling in the pit of his stomach. Baba closed his eyes for a few moments. When he opened them, they were noticeably red. The disciples grew even more anxious, but Baba smiled and said, "I am your slave from long, long ago." Baba looked at Dasarath. "Dasarath, say something about me. Who was I?" "How can I do that, Baba?" "Do dhyan." Baba reached out and touched him again. "What do you see now?" "Baba, I see the currents of sanchara and pratisanchara. The entire universe is emanating from you. I see creatures that I have never seen before. Such creatures as are not found on this earth." "Yes, there are many different planets in this universe that contain life. The creatures found on other planets are different from the ones found here. Now what do you see?" "I see that you are nourishing living creatures and then killing them." Baba smiled. No, no, no. How can I kill anyone? You should use a different word. At this moment, Chandradeva shouted, Bhagavan Shri Krishna Chandra Ki Jai! Victory to Lord Krishna. The other Margis followed suit. When they calmed down, Baba told them that Shri Krishna has shown the same scene to his disciple Arjuna. For many births, you have been with me and worked with me. We have established Dharma on many different planets, but you don't remember it. It is God's desire that Dharma be established from one planet to another. You have all helped me in this work. Many times the immoralists have done you great harm, but you have always emerged victorious. We have also come to this planet for a special work, and after we finish it, we will go elsewhere. Those children who need salvation will get it, and those who want to come to other planets with me will come. Baba then walked out of the room and headed out the gate for his house. The Margis remained in his room, looking at each other, still overcome by the significance of what they had just seen and heard.